Since you're being a brat, I'll roll tape.
Okay. I'm not being a brat. Like, Lacey was watching that. And she
all right, guys. So, for the last year...
Herbies. Start a honey farm called Herbies. Catch them. Once you try Herbies, honey, you'll never get rid of it.
Okay, we're starting in 3 minutes. I think.
I think I gotta poop.
Still do your mom. Check 1, 2. Hey, everybody.
You know we strike. All right,
guys. So for the last year, we've talked about wall management.
The paradigm of absolute control. And that's why we're just out here doing simple things, pointing out that we're meant to be in nature and be natural. And this is where we find the source that God made to transcend the new world order. And that's why they want to try to keep us out of it.
I'm angry. I've had enough of this sheeple. Little bones of Christian murder, scum, and one giant death factory's keeping babies alive and selling their bodies parts. What more do you need to know about these people? I go out and face these scum. They literally crawl out from under rocks. They have green looking skin and they run around screaming, we love Satan, we want to eat babies. I have them on video.
No.
Hillary's in the creepy, weird sex stuff, man. She sleeps in the same room with that creepy, weird woman whose mother wears a hood over her head.
What the hell?
Now, woman number one is ugly. Imagine how bad she smells, man. I'm told her and Obama just stink. Obama and Hillary both smell like sulfur.
Literal vampire pot, then the goblins are hobbling round coming after us. My spirit gets close to that evil and I feel it go.
We're such self-centered crap. We don't even notice and it's half rising up against us. Millions of pointed people of the very worst type, and I'm so pissed.
You can't see that one.
We're gonna stab your daughter at the mall.
Oh, oh, oh.
We're gonna stab your wife, your son. Stab you with a butcher knife, and then the police chief is gonna say, we love our Somalis, we love our Muslims, oh, they're so good, oh, they're so sweet.
What?
Poe Pierce, person, I posted the Discord, did a video all on the friend zone.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because she's a very brilliant female engineer. She talks about, like, because she's.
On our Discord?
Yeah.
Okay.
She spends most of the time around, like, guys. She talks about how she learned to be around guys, to not let them get on, like, hey, because she also noticed, like, guys just have a different friendship style than women. Like, so, like, that way that women develop friends that she noticed that's very empathetic, I'm there for you, but you do that with a guy, kind of gets them the wrong signal, and that's where she said, that's where she thinks it comes from. But, you know, you can tell she's an INTJ, on the spectrum, female engineer. Your type.
you mean my mortal enemy.
So your mortal enemy.
All right,
so.
You ready?
Whatever. Yeah, I bet if she slid, you know, she responded to one of your DMs, you respond back. Act like you wouldn't.
I'm sure I would.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, because she's blonde, British.
Oh, I'm in. I'm in. All right, we're almost there.
All right, what are we doing tonight?
Open borders.
I did not see that in the trailer.
It's it. Listen, it was a game time decision. Game time decision. All right, here we go.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Yikes.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Welcome to this episode of We Are Libertarians. My name is Chris Spangle. You're listening to episode 321. We're going to talk about open borders and why they're a good thing. And then we're going to talk about how much Hillary Clinton sucks. So something for everybody. Lots of great material today. So make sure you stay tuned here on this October 10, 2018 episode. With me is Harry Price. And we'll get started right after this very important disclaimer.
Warning, this show is for adults, produced by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
All right, welcome to the show tonight. We're going to have a fun night. It's just me and my old buddy, Harry. Harry Price, how are you?
Going good. Long day of work.
Yeah, so we did it on a Wednesday night. We're doing it a little early so I can live tweet with Rupert. I'll explain that in a second. You had a thing yesterday, so
yeah,
little off, but
a lot of things.
A lot of things are off. You walked in and I was asleep.
Yeah, he was in his blanket fort. You know, at first I was worried.
I heard, "Are you okay?"
But yeah, well, when I got to the door was ajar, right? And I was like, "Oh no!" You know, finally, you know, something happened. You know, that's what I said. Finally, finally, listen to me. So I opened the door. I did see, you know, the house was still clean. So, okay, what's going on? You know, so I called out, didn't hear anything back from him. And I finally, like, peeked around the corner, you know, and saw him there in his blanket fort.
This is nice. Just noticing, Vote Your Conscience on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. Thank God I found you. I am at home at last. Isn't that sweet? Yeah, we have a YouTube channel. You can watch the video of every episode. You can listen to every episode. If you're the type that can't listen to the podcast at work, but you can on YouTube, then you can get all the audio from that. That and most of our shows. The Boss Hog fellas have their own channel, but everything else is on that channel. We're trying to get to 1,000 so we can try and monetize it.
Correct.
I just want to make $100 so I can get that 21 that already exists in the account sent to me. So if you would, please go like us on YouTube. You can watch all the videos. So, you know, when Mittens walks up on the table as she is right now, you can then see her tail in the shot, and it's very exciting stuff. Plus, every Saturday night or every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we have a video series called Fundamental Freedoms with Sarah Brady Wagner, where we take 2 or 3 minutes and break down the basics of libertarianism. And that is specifically designed for you to share with your friends. It's non-threatening. It's simplistic. It's really well done. So go check that out. A work in progress. So please like our YouTube channel. A nice gentle show tonight, hopefully. We're going to talk about some open border stuff, little immigration stuff. We're going to go through my Facebook page because I've been on fire lately and making a lot of good points. And one of the things that we'll cover as we go down that list of stories is Hillary Clinton finally telling the truth. For the first time ever, Hillary Clinton has told the truth. I don't know if you've heard about her comments yesterday.
No.
I'm not even going to let you know.
No, that's the reason why we didn't record it. I was super busy yesterday.
Yeah, so we've got a ton going on. But, you know, Harry and I talk from time to time about wall management. I know that it seems that I'm in charge around here, but we do have managers.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is an outfit run by a corporation. We do have corporate overlords. Susan and Rose. They are our bosses. And every year I go in and I have a meeting with them and have a meeting with wall management. And, well, just take a listen, Harry. It didn't go well.
Ooh.
So take a listen.
All right, guys. So for the last year, we've talked about wall management. And, you know, I love to share everything with you. So I decided to secretly record this year's review with them. And I'm walking into the conference room now. So take a listen.
Welcome for wall management. My name is Susan, and this is my associate, Rose. It's time for you, Ruby.
Hi, yeah, I'm Chris. I'm the host of We Are Libertarians.
Welcome to the meeting. Nice to see you again.
It's great to be here. I feel like we had a really good year. You know, we went through a lot of changes. So what do you think of the show right now?
Sucks.
Bye, show.
What intonation are you doing that on the air?
I'm going to fire you if you don't get your ratings up.
This is a terrible show. You're not right, Kendall. You can do better.
Wow. Okay. Well, I thought things were going really well. I just introduced Walt Daly, where I do monologues.
You're no Alex Jones. Maybe take a little super mentality. You are very low on testosterone.
Okay. Well, what about Harry? Because he's great.
Hey, you suck.
We don't have to cancel your 2019 contract.
As you know, we haven't cut back. No more toffee.
Thank you!
But we have a ton of great shows right now, like the Boss Hog of Liberty.
Bye, show! It's time to cancel this show. And please stop feeding people to alligators.
No fun!
Alright, but what about Brian Nichols?
Nurse. Libertarian is a nurse. I said he sucks. Poop! Stop wasting your boat.
Man, there has to be at least one thing that you like about this network.
Tab Washer is the only good show. I love Tab Talk. They're in a huge way. Na 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 na.
I love America.
I'll fire you.
Alright, so you may not like the content, but look at the Patreon numbers. They're way up from when we introduced it this time last year.
You can do better. Did you see these numbers? I see better numbers. Inside my sister's diaper.
It's no buying.
You loser. You need to get that numbers up. Those are rookie numbers. I sold 5 million by the time when I'm 2. Where are my pie charts?
Man, you'd think you'd like this show more in the age of Trump.
Boo Donald Trump! Boo Donald Trump! I hate him.
I know, please.
I really thought that this was going to go a lot better than it did. I mean, is there anything else?
Yes. You can do better. Not to mention you're ugly. And for goodness sake, trying to not look so fat on YouTube. Where else? I'm canceling this show.
I don't want to see you again. Get out of my office.
Have a nice day.
Okay, well, thanks for your time, and I'll talk to you soon.
I said the day.
Sorry, I just tooted. Thank you, Jason Food Doodle. Thank you, Tristy Avery. Thank you, Trader Doster. Thank you, Pop Junior. Thank you, Libertarian. And everyone that donates to Patreon.
I was going to.
That's real frontier gibberish.
We got they before the meeting ended. They did thank Jason Doofoodle,
yeah,
and Christy Avery, Craig Costa, Paul Junior.
Yeah.
And the Lambman Coalition. Harry, they were no fan of you.
Yeah. I was shocked.
2019 contract canceled. No more coffee. And Rose says it's stinky.
You know what? I'm going to have to, you know, reapply the contract, switch it up, put some things up.
I don't know. They're pretty firm in their words. Yeah. They called Brian Nichols a nerd.
Yeah, that was
said libertarians are nerds and stop wasting your vote.
Yep. I know. It's rough.
For real?
It's got to be rough.
Yeah. But then they told me to not look so fat on YouTube, which is accurate, honestly.
Well, the camera adds, you know, like 20 pounds.
Yeah.
And Amiibo is 25. So.
Right. Exactly right. So, but yeah, so my favorite part of that was thank you, Jason Foo Doodle. That's very, very cute. A yep. Long conversation was had after that, which was, you're not allowed to say these words to anyone. This was for pretend. So, but yeah, yep. Sorry about your contract, Harry. They love Tad, though. Tad gets a huge raise.
Yeah.
No. So, you know, I got to be honest. I'm sitting here trying. I literally told Harry, I go, I got nothing, man. So here's how I do this show. When I'm reading, I have to do a lot of reading. So you have to go out and you have to find some stuff. And you have to mm-hmm. go, all right, I don't know what's going on in the world. And if I'm going to talk about it in 3 days, then I better read a newspaper or a magazine or a blog or something.
Right.
And for the first time in a long time, I read and I was like, nothing's grabbing me. Because William F. Buckley once said, he was asked, how do you know what you want to write about? He's the founder of National Review. He said, simply, I find something that pisses me off and then I write about it. And that's sort of how I do this. I approach it the same way. If it evokes passion in me or if I have a comment about it, then I want to talk about it. And so there wasn't a lot this week. So in terms of current events, there isn't a ton of stuff. But, you know, thanks to our amazing research team, and you may not know this, but something really cool behind the scenes is happening at We Are Libertarians. And I'm very thankful and I'm very appreciative for it. We've introduced We Are Libertarians Daily. So those weird episodes that you see in between the episodes now, we're going to test that out for a while and see, you know, how long before we get burnout, if we ever get burnout, how many days a week can we give you episodes? How many different voices can we give to your audience? You know, for instance, Sarah Brady Wagner and Hody Johns just recorded an episode about in vitro fertilization. To be quite honest, that's not a show that I would have ever planned out. But we already got one comment in the Discord saying, holy crap, I love this. Thank you for doing this episode. Because part of what We Are Libertarians is about and what the goal has always kind of been, what National Review did, William F. Buckley has always been a hero of mine and, you know, and especially my former co-host Greg, you know, because what Buckley did is he invited in a bunch of people from the right. He invited in people like Murray Rothbard, for instance, to participate in National Review, and a ton of libertarians and a ton of conservatives and paleoconservatives and neocons and a bunch of different people who were just on the right mm-hmm. to have this conversation from a right perspective. And he ended up creating the new right. Essentially, in the wake of Goldwater. And our goal at We Are Libertarians has always been to kind of get to this point where we have a bunch of different libertarian voices, regardless of where they fit on that, oh, this is an anarcho-capital. Like, this is not an outlet that I'm not Roger Paxton. I love Roger dearly. You should go listen to the Lava Flow podcast. He's a very strong ANCAP.
Mm-hmm.
He's on Free Talk Live. Those guys are ANCAPs. And so they're trying to give you an ANCAP perspective. And when Roger tries to put together a show, he's trying to put together ANCAP co-hosts. And that's not my goal. My goal is not to give you one definite perspective of libertarianism. It is to carry on a conversation amongst a large variety of people who make up a diverse backgrounds of both thought, of lifestyle, of opinion. You know, we have everybody from... you know, I probably fall into this, the more Christian, personally conservative camp to the more liberal, humanist perspective coming from the left, male, female, you know, and even in the history going back, you know, somebody like Maya, who was trans, may still be for all I know. We don't keep up. But the goal has always been to have an ongoing conversation amongst libertarians that are friends, that get along mm-hmm. for the most part, and airing it so you can then listen in and talk about current events and talk about the human perspective, what it means to be a human being in 2018 and How do we negotiate the rules? Because one of my firm beliefs is, you know, when Jefferson talks about refreshing the Tree of Liberty with the blood of patriots, what he's talking about is every generation must relearn liberty. Every generation must relearn the lessons that were learned the generation before, because we do a poor job of remembering. You know, I think the Jewish faith is fantastic in the way that it remembers its history so well. And every year and every holiday is a reenactment of their history to never forget the lessons that were taught. And I think we've become, in the digital age, even worse at remembering a lot of things. And so we want to put this stuff on tape for people. And by having conversations that human beings in 2018 can connect to, they start to realize that they do belong within the libertarian movement. Maybe not the Libertarian Party. Maybe they want to be Republicans or Democrats or non-voters or whatever. But just that this libertarian thing seems like normal to me, because they're hearing real people have real conversations. And so one of the things that I found over the last year is that, A, I'm trying to do too much, and I don't want it to be just about me. Obviously, you know, I started it. I'm the founder of this, and I think most people come to listen to what I have to say, to be quite frank, based on the download numbers. But people want to hear different voices. They want to hear different topics, and they want to hear things that Harry's interested in. They want to hear things like, I'm not particularly knowledgeable, nor am I terribly interested in a lot of the things that may be posted in these daily episodes. But that's not the point. You know, when Harry is super on fire about something and it may not interest me, I find that a good portion of the audience really wants to hear what Harry is talking about. You know, and so I don't want to create an army of little Chris Spangles just going out there and you know, and so we're recruiting people to record these little daily 20-30 minute episodes. People that I know have the ability to pull it off, the ability to put into words their insights, to cover things from a perspective that are really detailed and are not going to waste your time, and you know. And then quality of audio, which initially it's going to be a little rough. Yeah. Just stick with it. We're going to, as the Patreon dollars roll in, what I'm going to do is send equipment to some of these regular recurring hosts. So, you know, I listened to a couple today and I'm like, I got to get that guy a mic. I got to get this guy a mic. That's what the Patreon money is going to go towards. It's going to go towards upgrading equipment and things like that. It always does. And supporting that network. And so the goal is to give you more, which is what you've asked for. We want more content. We want more voices. We want more subjects. And we want it in this sort of style. A lot of these are going to be conversational between a couple people. Some of them may be monologues. Some of them may be interviews. Some of them may be debate audio. Who knows? We're just going to kind of test it out. We're going to experiment a little bit. And see what you guys like and what you don't. Already getting really good comments on the first couple, and we appreciate that. And so if you'd like to see it continue, you got to do three things. First, donate on Patreon and make it clear that your Patreon donation, you know, get in the group or send me a note and say, hey, it's going because you're doing more content. Two, share it on social media and say, I loved this episode. I got a lot out of this episode. Hey, check this out. And number three, send me a note and just say, hey, I really liked this. And send the host a note, because their currency is going to be, you know, for now, the currency is compliments. And so if you like what somebody put their time and effort into, it took them probably an hour to research that 20 minutes of content you're hearing. You know, so that 20 minutes is probably taking an hour or two to put together. Make sure you thank them. And let them know they're doing a great job and copy me on it, because I want to hear who you like. So that is what is up with the extra stuff in the feed, and I hope that you like it. And you know, my fear is when you change things up a little bit, especially when you maybe overwhelm a feed with content, people unsubscribe. But I'm not that worried about it, because I feel that the people who will stay are the ones who really want that content in the first place. So that's what we're doing. That's what we're up to. This was all Harry's idea, so if you hate it, then you can blame Harry. We are looking forward to your first episode, Harry. It's mandatory for you, everybody else. It's voluntary. But we got Reinhold, we got Sarah, we got Hody, we got Brian Nichols recording one as we speak.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're gonna have Tad do some. I'm talking to Clayton Harrison.
Yeah, good old Clayton.
Clayton Harrison in New York City about doing some. Now that he has a nice job, he has a pseudonym.
Well, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So we'll. But anyways, so that's what's going on, Harry. When you do your first episode, what's it going to be about?
I have absolutely no idea because I have been jumping into a lot of this Saudi Arabia stuff from WikiLeaks. And so I can't really read Arabic, so it takes me a while to like translate it and get it translated several different spots. So like I'm just kind of delving into like crap most people don't even care about. So I don't really know. But it could be like, you know, but there's so much other stuff like... I really feel like doing an whole episode of why I hate Facebook.
Okay. And
because I feel like I keep having the exact same conversation. Like, well, why aren't you on there more often? Why are you on there? It's like, yeah, I hate it. And it's not like a normal hate, like, well, like, everyone's got these other reasons why they hate Facebook. I have, like, reasons, like, that I feel that are valid and why I dislike the place.
Well, we want to hear them. The people want to hear from Harry. You're very popular.
Am I?
Not with me, because I tried to set up a Linux server today, and it didn't go well, so I'm blaming you.
Honestly, I think the Linux server probably did everything fine. I think you probably forgot to sudo one too many times, or someone accidentally gave you root privileges.
I don't know what I did. You're going to have to come over and help me.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
All right, let's jump into it. So this prep, as I said, we've got a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes. One of them is our research team. And if you're out there and you're tired of wasting your time on Facebook arguments and want to put that that brain power towards something more useful, then hit me up privately and you can join our research team, editor at wearelibertarians.com. And we've got several different shows already prepared in there, you know. And so I'm not feeling the inspiration. Then I was able today to go in there and go, oh, wow, great information all put together by our friend Hody Johns, member of the research team that we've got, tons of detail. You know, and so it is one of the benefits of kind of creating a little network of people who are willing to work together to bring you great information. And that takes time to manage, and I'm not doing great at it, but we'll get there. But thankfully, we've got really great people like Hody putting together research. And so, you know, he came to me and he said, I want to talk about the argument for open borders. And I look at it from a very philosophical perspective, you know, and I've said before that my feelings on it are mixed for a lot of different reasons, which we'll kind of get to in this. But in the research that he did, he made some really compelling points that I want to share with you. But okay. I think first what we need to do is really to define some terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not doing great at this as a society. We're arguing feelings. We're arguing things that we think are true, but we're not actually arguing definitions. What is a leftist? What is a liberal? What is a progressive? What is a conservative? What is a right-wing conservative? So there's all these different terms that everybody's throwing around at each other.
Yeah.
And it's very subjective at this point. And so...
Yeah. It means nothing. It almost means nothing. Right. Calling someone left or right means almost nothing nowadays.
Right. You know, it's like your traditional conservative, like Mike Pence in the media now gets called a far right-wing conservative. No, he's just your milquetoast, run-of-the-mill conservative. Yeah. But you add that little far right-wing, and then it sounds scary.
Scary.
So the argument for open borders. So let's define some of these terms. This is all from the Cambridge Dictionary. So an open border is a situation in which goods and people can enter and leave a country easily. So it's just open. It's like how would you put it? Not even mesh. It's just there's nothing
just
there.
Open.
Open.
Just open. You just travel.
Open. No, yeah. No barriers to entry.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
A conditionally open border is a border that allows movement of people across the border that meet a special set of conditions. So it can be as simple as showing an ID, which is the case between the UK and Ireland. So mm-hmm. You just have you don't get harassed. There's no border guards. There's no passports. It's just, hey, show your ID so we kind of check you, and then you can move between those two borders. It's low barrier, minimum security prison.
Mm-hmm.
Is maybe the way we ought to put it.
Yeah, as you escape the prison colony, which is the UK.
Right. Controlled border. A border that allows movement of people between different jurisdictions, but places restrictions and sometimes significant restrictions on this movement. This type of border may require a person crossing this border to obtain a visa, or in some cases may allow a short period of visa-free travel in the new jurisdiction. A controlled border always has some method of documenting and recording people movements across the border for later tracking and checking compliance with any conditions associated with the visa or any other border crossing conditions. A controlled border places limitations on what a person crossing the border can do in the new jurisdiction. This is usually manifested in limitations on employment, and also it limits the length of time the person can legally remain in the new jurisdiction. This is the current type of border the U.S. has with Mexico, for instance. A closed border, so that's medium security prison.
Yeah.
So, like, we have medium security prison between Mexico and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's closed border. A border that prevents movement of people between different jurisdictions with limited or no exceptions associated with this movement. These borders normally have fences or walls in which any gates or border crossings are closed, and if these border gates are opened, they generally only allow movement of people in exceptional circumstances. The demilitarized zone between the North and South Koreas and the Berlin Wall could have also been called a closed border. So this is maximum security prison. And so, you know, sometimes the argument is between the open border.
Right.
And the maximum security prison border. Mm-hmm. And the reality is it's always going to fall in between there because we're not – in this day and age, it's like we're making it binary as opposed to the gradations that exist. The gray areas don't exist. It's black or white.
Well, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying that it doesn't exist. But I think besides the closed part – all those borders exist inside the United States.
Right.
There is an open border between Greenwood and Indianapolis,
mm-hmm.
Southport. There's an open border between Lawrence, Indianapolis, Lawrence and McCordsville, Lawrence and Geist. These are open borders. They're right. Borders of towns. These are actual towns. They have, you know, they have different, you know, rules and regulations in each town as you're moving over there. Just like there's an open border between Illinois and Indiana.
Right.
You know, there's free movement of travel between anyone going from Illinois to Indiana. Then you've got, what is it, Minnesota up there, the northern part of Minnesota, where people travel through Canada to get to the other part of Minnesota and to get back to the United States again, which is, you know, like I said, borders are silly places, where they simply just have to show ID, call on a, it's not even a border guard that's there, it's a phone. And they get out and they call on the phone and they just say that they're crossing and they give their ID number. There's a school bus that actually goes across this border every day for school and they stop and they give all the kids IDs, numbers to these to the phone box and the bus driver gets back on the bus and drive across the border again and they do this again every day.
Yeah, so this is a good time to mention a couple distinctions in open borders. There's the de jure open border, which is not the soup of the day. Open borders that are legally recognized as open and non-restrictive. De jure means in law in Latin. India and Nepal are examples of having a de jure open border as legal statute exists that demands all citizens be allowed to go back and forth without restriction. De facto open borders, borders that may or may not legally be open, but since no enforcement or law exists, people are able to cross them freely. Canada and the U.S. have a de facto open border, mm-hmm. as both countries can legally restrict movement over the borders, but neither actively do.
Yep.
So there's ones where...
Except in weird places. There's some weird places where you've got to cross and stuff like that.
Right.
But you could go like 10 minutes down the road and it's just cross the street or miss your Jeep. Lose GPS connection in the woods and walk right across the border.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird.
So let's take a look at the history of borders within the United States. Let's look at some historical perspective.
Okay.
Because we I think, you know, the constitutional conservatives would argue that the founders wanted a closed border. But when you actually look at history, that's not the way that it worked. So when you look at the Articles of Confederation, for instance, literally every single person in America was an immigrant, including the natives themselves, whose migration was well documented. So everybody in the beginning of this country was an immigrant. And then the Constitution...
And slaves.
And slaves, that's right. And the Constitution guarantees... Then the Constitution was written, and it guarantees freedom and protections for all peoples, not just citizens. So sometimes people will argue that the Constitution is written for Americans, but that's not the way that the founders saw it. The founders saw the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution as, this is natural law. We're writing from a place of, if you're human, these conditions should exist this way.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time that they actually talk about non-citizens and what rights they do or don't have within the borders of the United States, they expressly mention it. And so it goes out of its way to tell us what rights non-citizens don't have, namely running from president, House, Senate, or Supreme Court qualifications. So, and they only wrote those in because those people had the ability to control the force of government.
Correct.
And so they didn't want a foreign power coming in and infiltrating the government.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, coordinating and colluding with a candidate and then having them take over.
Right, which happened. Yeah, what happened in European courts where they would, you know, get someone in there and they play the court system to, you know, get in power of different, like, in royalty.
Right. And so the beginning of America, the first 100, 150 years, you had a tremendous amount of growth and you know, inventions and economic opportunities and things were created because of immigrants that weren't first born Americans in that group. For instance, Joseph Pulitzer, Hungarian immigrant, revolutionary journalist. Levi Strauss was a German immigrant. He popularized jeans, obviously. Irving Berlin, the Russian immigrant who wrote White Christmas and God Bless America, served in World War I as well on the American side. You had Alexander Hamilton, the Caribbean immigrant. He pioneered capitalism, helped win the Revolutionary War, persuaded New York to join the Union, and authored the Federalist Papers. You had Andrew Carnegie. He was a Scottish immigrant. He spearheaded the Industrial Revolution, connected the U.S. with railroads, turned steel into a staple of construction. You had Ayn Rand, who was a Russian immigrant. She was an objectivist, a libertarian icon, and authored Atlas Shrugged and the Fountainhead. There's Nikola Tesla, a Croatian immigrant, electrical pioneer, inventor of the Tesla coil and the alternator, and radio and many different other things. There's also the Marquis de Lafayette. He frequently took advantage of the open borders between France and America.
Yep.
With the rest on this list, you could argue that maybe they would have gotten into America after some extra hassle and time, but under current conditions, Lafayette never would have been able to move as freely as he did and participate at the level of government in which he did. Without Lafayette's ability to move from country to country freely, we would have undoubtedly lost the Revolutionary War because he was so dedicated to the American cause. And these are all people who immigrated here prior to 1921, and that's when things changed. Imagine that in the progressive era shortly after the progressive era. So you have a massive amount of immigrants. A lot of my family immigrated here with the German immigration in the 1870s. I don't know about your family. I have some family that fought in the Civil War for the Union on my dad's side. I have English royalty on my mom's side. I also have Hatfield and McCoy, Hill people on my mom's side. The tree doesn't fork a lot in one branch of my family. and then she married English royalty. God bless America. But, you know, I'm third or fourth generation German on my dad's side. And I actually had a date last night with She's Vietnamese.
Okay.
Her parents immigrated here in the 90s. And, you know, she had a whole history of her family's immigration story to this country. I'm third or fourth generation out. I have no history. I have no idea why any of my ancestors immigrated to this country, but I can tell you that they did. So I am a little jealous of that story. By the way, the date ended with, "Hey, it was great to meet you." It's usually not a good sign you're going out again.
You don't know that.
No, I know that. So, but, you know, we are so assimilated now, three or four generations in, most of us, that we don't know how our families immigrated here. So things changed in 1921. And that's when the Emergency Quota Act. Harry, if somebody in government introduces something with the Emergency Blank Act, how do you react to that?
It's like, knee-jerk reaction to some bull crap.
That's never going to go away.
It's never going to go away. It's going to be the worst, but it's going to be temporary, but it's going to be the worst thing imaginable.
And guess what? It wasn't temporary. We're still living with it nearly 100 years later. So why did we stop letting people in? Why did we start to go from more of an open borders free country to more of a closed borders country? It was because people became scared of white Eastern Europeans in the aftermath of World War I. So study.com writes, so what spurred the Emergency Quota Act? In the early 1900s, there was a social anti-immigration movement in the United States. People began to push the federal government to restrict the number of foreigners who could enter the country. This is ironic, given that there were so many people here that were already, in fact, foreign-born. There was an inherent prejudice and fear against those who were born elsewhere, known as xenophobia. This fear contributed to the nativist movement, which believed in rejection of anyone foreign-born. So from the actual law, the most important legislation from the earliest, so this is actually, what's the source on this? Let me look at this. Immigration.laws.com writes about this particular piece of legislation. The most important legislation from the earliest 20th century came in 1921. Referred to as the 1921 Quota Act, this legislation utilized immigration statistics to determine a maximum number of immigrants allowed to enter the United States from each nation or region, a practice we still continue today. The numbers were skewed to favor immigration from Western European nations while severely curbing immigration from areas perceived to be undesirable, which at the time was Eastern Europeans. In what would be a great twist of fate, the act limited immigration that only targeted whites, and the act set no limit on immigration from Latin America. As with many government policies, it was intended to be temporary. Thus, why would the emergency word be in that title? But the government never got around to giving the power back to Americans. In 1965, this law was replaced by the Immigration and Nationality Act, which expanded upon these powers and allowed the government to base citizenship on a system of preferences based on immigrant skills and family relationships with U.S. citizens or U.S. residents. So I actually heard Rush Limbaugh talk about this today. He mentioned this very thing that I heard him talking about. And here's how he spun it. In 1921, great Americans who ruled over the country at that time basically said, you know, we need to put a stop to all this immigration because we've got too many new people here and we need to give them time to assimilate. So we're going to stop immigration. And then Teddy Kennedy and the Democrats in 1965 realized that people didn't like progressivism, so they crafted the 1965 law to allow their base to grow by allowing in more minorities to come in and start voting for Democrats. Now, that's how Rush Limbaugh interpreted that information that I just gave. And he may not be, I mean, on the assimilation part, he's wrong. Yeah. It was blatant racism, but, you know, yeah. The early 1920s was when the Klan was in charge of the country. Not for nothing.
Right.
The birth of the nation had been shown by Woodrow Wilson previously in the previous decade. But in the 60s, the immigration overhaul, it could have totally been Teddy Kennedy and the Democrats trying to expand their political base. That sounds like something that politicians would do.
In the Kennedys, yeah.
In the Kennedys. But so I can't say that for sure. So, but we're in a different place in 1921, and hasn't the environment changed to the point that we don't have to discriminate anymore? I mean, think about the difference between America now and America in 1921. Toilet paper wasn't a staple in the home for almost any homes until the mid-1920s. So people were still wiping their butts with corn cobs.
Yep.
At least here in Indiana. Or their hands, or not at all.
Buildings still running on DC power, diesel generators in the basement, and
if they had
kerosene.
If they had power. The car was barely something that many people were using. So think of people weren't flying on planes, on commercial planes yet. So the reality is that the world is a bit different in 1921. The economic, think of the wealth in the United States now versus 100 years ago. It's night and day. And so what argument do we have for not, what is the stress and the strain that is... that is keeping us from doing this.
Rich in 1920 is like, oh, you're college student in 2018. I have power. Oh, good job, bud. We all right. do. Okay.
Yeah. I would be in this one room apartment. Mm-hmm. Hey, it wouldn't be one room. It'd be a room apartment.
Bathroom down the street.
And the whole family would still be together. So.
Yeah.
So if one of our borders is already de facto with Northern Canada, right? So,
right.
Like, we already have one border that's de facto. So the trouble we'd be in isn't unimaginable. We'd already have an example today of what one looks like, Hody writes. But this is where I think Hody makes an interesting point. But yes, we are in a different place now. Opening our borders back up would also mean in instituting and repealing policies, which would lead society to a place that, he says, is libertarian as fuck. And so I've never heard it put quite this way. And I thought that he made an interesting point that I had never considered. So I'm giving him all the credit instead of taking all the credit myself on this, because I never had really thought about it like this. If we opened the borders completely, we would see a rush of people move in. And so it is a bit of overwhelm the system towards liberty. And so it's a little bit of the opposite of overwhelm it towards, you know, fascism. But so we'd have to repeal limitations on self-defense if we open the borders. Without the government vetting who is dangerous and who is not, the people would once again be entitled to protect themselves.
Right.
Relax. The government is still in charge of providing for the common defense, so a military movement over the borders will still be dealt with nationally.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd have to take better care of ourselves in terms of our own self-protection, because there'd be a lot more people who don't. But see, this argument, though, and this is where I'd quibble with this, is that I don't think that most immigrants are criminals. I don't think that he's saying that. But I think the argument is that the reason we have closed borders is we can't just let these murderers in. And so say back to those people, okay, so you don't believe in your right to self-defense? Like, you're asking the government to decide who is and who is not a criminal instead of inviting the opportunity to protect yourself more?
Right.
To stress the system in favor of more self-protection, in favor of more gun sales? What kind of Second Amendment activist are you that you believe in closed borders? So I think that's a really interesting argument. We'd have to limit or overhaul welfare. Or abolish, I would say. In the event that everybody who came here is unable to provide for themselves, we'd have to cease or significantly reduce the amount of free money going out, turning immigrants from being nothing but risks of burden into nothing but risks of prosperity. Odds are we'd have to implement an often libertarian-backed universal basic income, in which case money enters the system straight through its citizens instead of through centralized banks, which would reduce political buyout and cronyism. Now, I can't speak to this because I have not studied universal basic income at any serious deep level. So, but when you have a tremendous amount of people coming in here, there is access to state welfare. But according to the federal government, with federal programs, if you're an immigrant, you don't have access for 5 years after your naturalization to welfare benefits. So it's not like you enter this country. Now, you can obviously you know, lie and get fake documents or whatever and get benefits, but you know, that's fraud, and there's a risk of being found out and being deported, and that happens.
Correct. And people already do that to get insider anyways.
Right. You know, children can get benefits. Their children, if they're born here, let's say you are here illegally and your child's born in the United States, they have access to benefits, but that doesn't mean that the parents do. So sometimes this is an often misleading argument against, and it started by Milton Friedman, who said, "I just don't think we can open the borders till we get rid of the welfare state." And then Bill Clinton came in and said, "Okay, I'll take that away from you. I'll take that argument away from you," and it still persists.
Right.
So,
well, the other thing is that, to me, like, I don't like it when, because like, this discussion also sound like it's happening in a vacuum. Because the moment you bring them in here, they're, whatever country someone comes from, they're going to want their food, they're going to want their music, stuff like that. So they're going to make money.
Right.
From wherever they come in, just for people who cater to that type of environment. And having and if let go and allowed to, you know, basically be capitalistic and entrepreneurs, we'll just do. The biggest problem, I think, would be navigating the complicated practice inside the United States, like how to start a business licensing, taxes. Those would be more of the hindrance. Right. That what probably needs to be rolled back, not the welfare state.
So going back to that point, you know, economist Michael A. Clemens wrote a study called Economics and Immigration, $1 trillion Bills on the Sidewalk, which you can read in the show notes that I'll put in there. In it, he observes that countries that open their borders increase their GDP by anywhere between 67 and 147%, with a median estimate of doubling GDP. Right now, we're blown away at 4% growth. Increased GDP is not only the best indicator of wealth, increasing GDP is also the best way to ward off poverty. Lastly, we'd have to reform taxes. Now, to that point, by the way, freedom of movement, freedom of the movement of labor, and the ability to hire whatever labor you see fit is a key component of a free market. So it's hard to call yourself a free marketeer and a capitalist if you believe in closed borders, because you're using the power and the force of federal government to make a decision that you can't hire a certain segment of workers. And you are limiting the actual growth of the United States. So that's why when you open up the borders and allow labor to move across, cheap and free, you know, not free labor, but cheaper labor to move in, you increase GDP, which means more jobs for everybody, especially in the service industry. So all of those people who lost their jobs to maybe the lower wage workers now can find employment at service jobs. You know, you're going to have to build way more, you're going to have to build more houses. And yes, the cheap labor may be building the houses, but you're going to need the HVAC technicians to come in and put the HVAC in. You're going to need technicians to put in, you know, wiring and electrical. Carpenters usually are first generation immigrants, but electrical engineers, for instance, the people who come in and do the wiring in the house are not.
Right.
I've worked on construction sites, trust me. So
we'll have unions protect those jobs anyways.
Right. So you're opening up, when you grow your GDP in that way, you're creating more job opportunities in the very sectors that jobs are lost. People are just going to have to maybe find a different job. That happened to my dad. My dad could no longer compete in the marketplace of janitorial services in the 90s and switched to marble restoration. He went from dumping trash cans and mopping floors to a highly specialized skill that paid him a lot more money. So, you know, and it was a fairly painless transition for him. So we sometimes rely on these tropes that just don't really have real world applications because our bias wants us to confirm them. Lastly, we would have to reform taxes. Given that people can cross borders at will, taxes would need to stop being tied to property and income, since both of those taxes can be avoided with an open border. The two most likely scenarios are a flat sales tax that replaces all other taxes, or in the case of universal basic income, no tax at all, and the government keeps a percentage based on how much was given to the citizens. So what are your opinions on that? You're shaking your head.
Oh, sales tax. That's awful. That put all this burden on a business owner to collect the government's money for them. Screw that. They want it. They can come collect it themselves.
All right.
No, that's how I just feel about this.
I always was a fan of the fair tax, you know, back when I didn't believe taxation was theft, so I might disagree with you, but
If you have to do some theft, any theft at all, right?
Right.
But theft is awful. How about a dollar? Everyone gives a dollar. And if you think the government is being a good steward of your money, you just volunteer to give them more.
All right. $360 million government? Okay.
If you think they're doing a good job, give them more.
Maybe not the most realistic tax proposal I've ever heard.
Maybe they need to do a good job, and maybe someone would give more money.
Defining closed or heavily regulated borders due to bad state policies only protects the state from itself. Even if we don't deal with these issues first, opening the borders will not create a problem so much as it will reveal these bad policies and demand libertarian change to adjust for the good practice of opening our borders. And so as you increase labor, and trust me, the marketplace can handle it, as you saw women enter the workforce in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, you saw entirely new job markets open up, like the nonprofit and the nursing industries. Those are two places that increased in new opportunities because women have a different set of goals, social goals. And so they created job opportunities that match those social goals. And so as new immigrants come in, new job opportunities will happen. I live in a very highly populated area of immigrants, of people, the Chin, the people from Burma, who are Christians, who are persecuted from the Buddhists. And they get here with nothing. They come here with what they have on their body at that time. And, you know, they come into a culture from literally, you know, in some cases, lean-tos with dirt floors to, you know, an apartment in Southport, Indiana. And they get Bed Bath & Beyond coupons, and they show up at Bed Bath & Beyond for the free pillow because they think that's what it might say. You know, they have no idea what a Fresh Idea card or a Kroger card is. You know, and so so I've had a lot of interactions. Just it's like you kind of go to the grocery store, and they're like, and I'm like, hey, I'm nice and friendly. And, you know, all of a sudden over the last, I've lived in this little area here for about 10 years. And I have seen...
Too long.
Well, I have lived here and I have watched the businesses in this little town go from English-speaking businesses to more Asian-oriented businesses.
Yeah, that's true.
And the amount of improvement on the buildings has been significant.
Yes.
the area... In a lot of places, the businesses, when they move in and they create a grocery store, for instance, all of a sudden, when it was a Mexican restaurant, it was a dump. When it was an appliance store, it was a dump. And then it comes in and it turns into an Asian grocery or an Asian restaurant. And all of a sudden, the outside of the building starts to look nice because they don't know anything about zoning. They don't know anything about leases. They just like, this looks bad. I'm going to make my business look good. So the area I live in has actually improved because of the immigrants. So I find a lot of the stuff just not to match my own eyes. And sometimes, as we'll talk about later, I just see political arguments gaslighting me to believe something that my own eyes don't bear out, that facts that I read from think tanks don't bear out. And just because everybody thinks these things, it doesn't mean that they're true.
Right.
So...
I can see why you like living down here. It was very easy to get down here from leaving downtown Indianapolis to get down here. I get
10 minutes.
I get it. Yeah. Yeah, I get that. It took me, well, it took 18 because there was a small accident on the right before the I-70 and I-65 like juncture where you have to like choose between there. It was an accident like right there. Other than that, yeah, I was like, wow, I'm already down here.
It's super easy to get downtown. I'm 2 minutes from the airport. I'm 10 minutes from any store I might ever need.
Yeah,
you know, I have Levenschau legroom. Mm-hmm. You know, I drove from the downtown. I drove from 34th and Keystone.
Yeah,
and where I was a minority,
mm-hmm.
And then down through Fountain Square, where my economic class was a minority. There's a lot of white trash. and it's just everything's so cramped when you live in that part of, like, you drive through the parts of the city, and then you get to, like, my area, and, like, it's just, there's space. But it's still urban. It's still, I don't know. I like it.
This is not urban.
This is urban for Indianapolis.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah. Okay. Like, we don't, this is not Philadelphia, okay? This is barely Jacksonville.
Yeah.
So, you know, the mindset of our forefathers, you know, we have to ask ourselves, is opening our borders ethically good or not? You have to look at it multiple ways. Is it ethically good to close your borders and to grow the size of the state to enforce that? Or is it economically good to do that? You know, if you look at how previous generations thought about it, let's look at the Statue of Liberty, for instance. It's written in direct opposition to the Colossus of Rhodes. And the Colossus of Rhodes, one of the ancient wonders of the world, appealed to the already strong and well-off to maintain their status. And the Statue of Liberty called for the impoverished to become strong and well-off.
Mm-hmm.
It's different missions. And so we're not protecting the high upper tiers of the economic system. We're inviting the poor of the world to come here and become part of... And that is what has happened in America, except for what's happening over the last 50 to 100 years. We're now becoming more roads where we're trying to protect what we have as opposed to allowing other people to come in and grow and help grow America along with us. American poet Emma Lazarus wrote the New Colossus poem that is engraved on the Statue of Liberty, and it goes as such. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. So, it is a definite mindset shift. And I would also say to my Republican friends who believed in closed borders, it is one steeped in Christian ethic. So if you consider yourself a Christian, then obviously opening up your doors, when it does not harm you in any way, shape, or form, and in reality, economically, it's going to help you, opening up your doors to the tempest-tossed, those in trouble, those who are the huddled masses, the tired, the poor, and giving them shelter and refuge, and giving them an opportunity to change their position in the world is a very Christian ethic, as opposed to, I've got mine, I'm going to protect this with my tight little fists, and you're not getting any of it.
Yep.
So I think it's a very un-Christian argument to say that closed borders is necessary. So I would ask you to check your soul and search your faith to see where you might stand.
It's also anti-growth. When you start worrying about trying to protect your past, you don't make and do anything for your future.
Right.
Let's take the examples that we have. The great musicians, Metallica. Instead of embracing the future and with streaming music and the internet, they decided to fight it and dig their heels in.
And they lost.
Yes.
And they look foolish.
Yep. Let's go with
Garth Brooks, for instance, could be making billions of dollars on Spotify streaming, but he keeps his closed fence. He's like, I'm going to sell records at Walmart. I'm going to sell CDs at Walmart, and that's how I'm going to make my money. I'm not going to go on Spotify.
Yeah.
Nobody listens to your music now. So you're going to be lost to an entire generation because you're trying to get people to change their behavior to serve you as opposed to you putting your music where other people already exist. It's backwards thinking.
Think of Prince. Most people, most young millennials have never heard Prince unless someone older has hey, let me listen. Have you ever heard Prince?
2006 Super Bowl was the first time I ever heard a Prince song.
Oh, dear God.
Ever.
Right? And it's okay, there's a lot of people like that, and they've never heard anything. So you start bringing this song, it's wow, this is amazing. It's because it doesn't do anything.
Yeah. Whereas it's Michael Jackson,
They know.
Put it on commercials. Yeah. Put it everywhere. Yeah.
And Psy, P-S-Y, from South Korea.
Not Uncle Psy from Duck Dynasty.
No, this Psy. From Korea. Yeah, and the song, what was it? Goofy song. It was Gangnam Style. Right? Went everywhere. He's just like, no, go ahead. Just put it out there. Put it out there. Blew up YouTube. And it showed a lot of different people like, okay, you're right. If we lock our stuff down, we don't get the touch this guy has. This guy's making all this money because, you know, it's easy to share. It's one of the songs they could share, and you just let it go anywhere.
Yeah.
Then you've got who's that guy named? Edison. All right, Thomas Edison, right? He decided to spend the last years of his life to go after patents and just, you know, hold on to stuff instead of inventing.
While ripping off people like Tesla.
He started to go out on patents. You have no proof about that. Edison, and instead of creating inventing.
Fuck. Quote me. Fuck Thomas Edison. He was a thief. People, the contracts that he bamboozled people into. He was a thief.
Yeah, Steve Jobs of the early 1900s. Oh, sorry.
No, Steve Jobs. He made Steve Jobs look like
that is true.
Bill Gates.
Yeah, because Wozniak is Tesla.
Right.
You know.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. It's just luckily like people like listen to Woz. But, you know, but yeah, but so he sat around doing all these patents of looking about his past, just trying to do that instead of inventing. Do things that got you here.
Yeah.
You know, just do. The other thing is, like, I see a lot of people, like, worried about the singularity, the idea that eventually robots are just going to take over, stuff like that. You know, things that are pushing that up is the whole minimum wage thing, making minimum wage go higher and higher and higher. But if you can make wage cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and people come in, you slow this idea, this fictional idea of the singularity of where, you know, robots are going to replace everything with people. Right. Just keep throwing bodies at it.
So to continue on with the ethics idea, American ethicist Jacob M. Appel states that the ethics of open borders are strikingly clear. Treating human beings differently simply because they were born on the opposite side of a national boundary is hard to justify under any mainstream philosophical, religious, or ethical theory. That is not to say that all birthrights are unjust. For example, while being born into a particular family is the result of chance, the right to inherit some of one's parents' property serves useful and meaningful social purposes, such as encouraging mothers and fathers to work and save for their offspring. The birthright of nationality serves no social purpose. In contrast, the freedom to travel and to settle where one wishes in pursuit of political freedom or economic opportunity is among the most basic of human rights. Now, to put that in other words, we sometimes treat the idea that we need to protect and preserve American society for future generations. That is a fool's errand. It's not the same as saving money. When you are preserving things for future generations, your goal is to stop the growth of the state. Your job is to preserve human rights. Your job is to keep people like Hillary Clinton from growing the size of the state and robbing you of your rights, which include the freedom of movement, the freedom of speech, the freedom of self-protection, the freedom of private property, the freedom of property rights. So the freedom to life and life, liberty, and property. It's all in the Declaration of Independence. Your job as an American citizen in passing on a world to the next generation is to pass on the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
It is not to pass on heritage.
Correct.
And so the birthright of every American, we ought to consider the growth of the state as what we pass on to the next generation. Our parents, the boomers, did a terrible job. Look at the debt. Look at the war that we've had, the wars that we've had to fight. Look at the student loan debt that was given to us by them. Look at the broken healthcare system that we have to fix. Look at all these different things that the boomers and the greatest generation passed on to their children. They passed on a growth of the state that we can barely, if ever, recover from in our lifetimes. And so our job becomes rolling that back and passing on liberty to the next generation. And liberty does not include a giant wall. It includes the ability for you to hire whomever you like. Mm-hmm. That is freedom.
Yes.
And so if you believe in freedom, now listen, I've always said that you have the ability and the right to have some cognitive dissonance. Everybody has those issues where you just don't agree with pure libertarian doctrine. But this is orthodoxy. This is what no government or a small government looks like. And you can say, I don't believe that that is workable, and here's the reasons why. But you better have arguments and facts to back that up. And I think what happens is, I think in my own view of immigration over time, over the last decade, as I have tried to argue against open borders, I've started to see facts and economic numbers and all these different things that verify that. It's like when you really look at liberty for human beings, the economics always supports it. And this is one of those cases. So The Atlantic writes, what moral theory justifies using wire, wall, and weapon to prevent people from moving to opportunity? What moral theory justifies using tools of exclusion to prevent people from exercising their right to vote with their feet? No standard moral framework, be it utilitarian, libertarian, egalitarian, Rawlsian, Christian, or any other well-developed perspective, regards people from foreign lands as less entitled to exercise their rights, or as inherently possessing less moral worth than people lucky to have been born in the right place at the right time. Nationalism, of course, discounts the rights, interest, and moral value of the, quote, the other, but this disposition is inconsistent with our fundamental moral teachings and beliefs. And so that's the point in foreign policy and in immigration and anything dealing in non-domestic policy. Do other people have the same moral worth as you? I believe so. I don't look at a Pakistani and view them as less than me. I don't look at a Muslim and think they're worth less than me. I don't look at a Mexican and say they're worth less than me. They have the same inherent rights that you and I have. They exist under the Declaration of Independence as you and I do. They may not exist under the Constitution, but they all have the basic right to life, liberty, and property. And using our government to stop that is not something that I can always buy into. So we'll put some of the sources and we'll put this document into the show notes so you can see that. Harry, any final thoughts on open borders? This is obviously an ongoing conversation, so if you have comments or questions, editor@wearelibertarians.com or go to wearelibertarians.com and leave us a voicemail.
I will say this to Hody and his comments here in the YouTube channel. Like, I really haven't looked that much into universal basic income. The thought of it just kind of like makes my butthole pucker. Mm-hmm. I don't really like it. The other thing with this whole open border thing is I like the idea of allowing free people to travel where free people want to go. If people talk about, well, we have unfettered access of possible murderers and stuff like that, but you know, like I said, these borders exist between Illinois and Indiana. You know, south side of Chicago is one of the most dangerous places you can get to in the Midwest. And it's like a 2-hour drive from where I sit. You know, there's no border there. So let's be rational here. Let's really think about this. The other thing with it is when it comes to like the whole borders and allowing people to move in, you almost have that connected to the internet. The ability that you can touch anyone and communicate and work with anyone right now, anywhere in the world, we have that through the internet. Why not have that in physical meat space? We saw the massive boom that happened to the economy.
Is meat space your personal social network that you're starting? Come join Harry on his meat space.
On meat space, you know. If you hit meat spin, you've gone too far.
Somebody write that down. I'm starting meat space.
Meat space. where was I? So imagine you'd be able to have that. Like the company I worked with, we've got people who work in the quote-unquote Mexico Silicon Valley, Guadalajara. you know, and they're in order to go down there to visit these brilliant, you know, brilliant engineers, you know, I need to, you know, get my passport and go through the hassle of going through this stupid border to go see them, and the vice versa for them coming up here to Indiana to see me or see the work that we do here. It's horrible, you know.
I'm just saying, if you are out there, don't go to meatspace.com.
Just go to meat.
Go to meet. Not meat.
Also, don't go to Meatspin. But if you do go to Meatspin, please tell me how many spins you got up to.
I'm in the thousands, man.
There you go. There you go. That's a true champ. There, you get up. You can get up to four. You know, four digits.
All right. So my Facebook, I'm on fire. I think you all need to go follow me. I may not be able to friend you because I'm up to 5,000, but go follow me on Facebook. I'm killing it these days. I figured out the true purpose of social media, and it's just to shitpost. Like, if you listen to this program, I don't do any good advertising for this show on social media, because if you watch me on Facebook, you're like, what an a-hole. Is he an a-hole Republican or an a-hole Democrat? But, you know, if you listen to this show, I'm very reasonable, I think. But social media, it's really just about provoking and getting a reaction and having fun. And I like to have fun. And so, you know, I used to post the long, lofty, here's all these rational thoughts that I've had. And it's like, people don't care and they don't read it. They just want to be mad or they want to laugh. Mm-hmm. Like, I firmly believe that the internet just comes down to three things. People want to laugh. They want to be outraged about something, or they want to come. There is no other thing on the internet. Inspiration is worthless on the internet. You know, we are Libertarians Daily. I think it was episode 2. Talked to Lucy Brenton on Monday before her debate. She did excellent in the debate. And, man, Mike Braun, the Senate candidate who is the Tea Party favorite, just looked like he so low IQ, so low energy. Just looked he was disrespectful, and he didn't wear a suit. He looked like a libertarian candidate from the 90s. He had transition lenses, bad mustache, no suit. It's the guy that the Republicans would have made fun of, 20 years ago. Now, Lucy just killed Joe Donnelly, the Democrat, the incumbent, who's a moderate Democrat, pro-life, pro-gun. Is running ads here basically saying, I love Donald Trump and we've worked together.
I know, right? It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird to see the Democrat running pro-Trump ads saying, we're friends. But, it is funny. Once you get into campaign season, you see all of these different people who are like, you know, I want... what are you going to say, Harry?
I was saying that one ad that of Donnelly, like, he misses these meetings and doesn't do anything, and he's not effective. I was like, are you trying to get me to vote for this guy?
Right. It's exactly right. Yeah, he's ineffective, and he doesn't do anything. Okay, I'm in.
Sounds like my candidate.
You know, and so it is always funny to see people's reactions to a libertarian candidate. Many different people really liked Lucy Brenton and her performance, and a lot of them were Republicans, people that I came up with and that were party hacks and consultants for the Republican Party were like, this is a great candidate. But it is funny when you talk to people about how for so many years, for 2 years, we've not had elections now. And you hear people say, you know, I don't want politicians to pander to me. I want them to be honest. And then you get to election season and then they go, you know, I just can't vote for Lucy Brenton because she said ethanol is a waste of money and hemp would be a boon for Hoosier farmers. And a libertarian talking about hemp seems kind of loopy. And, you know, she had some catchphrases and that seemed off. And you just go, you don't want honest politicians. You want to be pandered to.
Yeah, you want pandering.
You want the empty suit.
Yeah, because if you looked at ethanol is awful. That's what's destroying your car is ethanol. Right. All right? You want to know what's making your car break down so fast? All the ethanol and the gasoline.
Yeah. And I just find that when people actually mock a libertarian candidate, especially Republicans, it's because that candidate is effective.
Freaking corn. I want corn in their freaking gas. Yeah. Cars. Sorry. But hemp, you don't understand. If Indiana does not get its act around, right, and the other part of the country does, like if we move on hemp and marijuana, like the state of Indiana moved on alcohol on Sunday sales, Indiana farmers are going to be behind, you know, going to be behind on a cash crop. The most, the best industry right now are marijuana businesses. That's what's growing. Okay, those are what's growing. That's what Silicon Valley is looking at. It's like weed businesses. That's what's growing.
Right.
It's weed businesses.
So the and obviously, anytime you have a strong libertarian candidate or any libertarian candidate, you get the wasted vote argument. Just stealing votes.
From whom?
Exactly. And so I posted, and I'll post a link to this in the show notes, but this landmark communications poll in the statewide poll of Georgia, it's not a great poll. It's less than 1,000 people, margin of error at 3.2%. But that number is still, at the end of the day, it is... sorry, I'm getting... I'm getting texts. So, sorry. So you've got Stacey Abrams, the Democrat, Brian Kemp, the Republican, who's an insane person. His campaign ads are full Trump. He's one of those guys that go look up Brian Kemp's ads. He's just embraced. I said it all along. Like, the worst part about Trump and Trumpism is that now we have to suffer the millions of clones that aren't as good or as charismatic as Trump for the rest of our days. And Brian Kemp is one of those people. And Ted Metz, the Libertarian. And so if you look at the polling, the total is 48% Brian Kemp, 46% Stacey Abrams, and 2.3% Ted Metz, 3.4% undecided. Now, what is interesting in this actual data. Now, the way that I came across this is that I got into a Twitter argument with a Democrat, and the Democrat was making the wasted vote argument, saying Ted Metz needs to drop out so Stacey Metz can win, or Stacey Abrams can win. And so the Democrat was making the wasted vote argument. And I said, what proof? Because this is my new argument to the wasted vote stuff. What proof do you have that those votes are being stolen? And he replied back with the thing that actually disproved his comment. And when you go and you look at the self-identified party line, 91% GOP for Brian Kemp, 91% for Stacey Abrams. Of the GOP self-identified Republicans who are voting for the Libertarian, it's 0.8%. When you look at the Democrat, 2.9% of Democrats are voting for the Libertarian. Okay, so that leaves, 96% of voters are just not part of the other two parties.
Yeah.
So it's completely negligible. 25% other party and 2.1% independent. So that means almost 70% of the people voting for the Libertarian are non-party affiliated or new voters. And so this is what you see time and time again in exit polling. Because I've been a Libertarian Party hack for a decade, I've fought the wasted vote argument forever, so I always watch exit polling. I watch these polls. I collect these little things to try and see if I'm right or wrong. And the highest I've ever seen was 33%, 33%, and 33%. 33% from a Republican, 33% from a Democrat, and 33% of I wouldn't have voted anyways, I'm a Libertarian, or I'm a new voter. So, but by and large, it is mostly people who aren't going to vote if they don't see an option. So the wasted vote argument is a total myth. The other thing that you can look up is just Google, and I'll put it in the show notes, but you can also Google the Libertarian vote in the age of Obama, and David Boas, B-O-A-Z, has written two books in Kindle about libertarian votes. So Cato disproves the wasted vote argument time and time again, every time they study it. And so you can ask that person, what is your actual proof? Where is your data that shows that this candidate is stealing votes from a Republican or a Democrat? I want to see your numbers. Is this just your feeling? Because facts don't care about your feelings. And then let's see what they come back with, because then you can, on the other side, hit them with all of this data that proves that they're a moron.
Right.
And then you say, not only is it not only are you incorrect in your assessment, but you're also un-American, because it is my First Amendment right to gather with other like-minded individuals and speak politically. So I'd appreciate it if you'd stop being wrong
un-American, and unethical.
The other thing is, you don't own those votes. Your party doesn't own them. You have to win them. You have to win hearts and minds. You have to produce a campaign that makes people want to vote for you. If you own those votes, then what the heck are we voting for elections? Why don't you just give me your attendance polls and we'll just use that? But, you know, it was like, and there should just be an R and L, RLD. Everyone hits that straight ticket. We just all go home. But no, no. The party's all broken down. It's like this so people can make choices and decisions based off, you know, campaigns that you run.
Right.
It's yeah, that's just not, stolen votes is, you know, siren songs of losers.
All right, so moving on to the next great thing that I posted on.
Or honestly, libertarians could probably say that the Republicans and the Democrats all steal votes for them because they all champion causes that, you know, libertarians have been championing for years. That they just now, when they become in vogue, they get onto it.
Right.
You know?
Hold on, I gotta text somebody. You keep talking.
Libertarians would be like, oh, you know, let's just take the GLBT rights, right? You know, that's libertarian, you know, now it's in vogue, now everyone wants to do it. Small government, oh yeah, we're small government, except for these wars, you know?
So, the next thing is from Newsweek, and I have verification that I was right on this point.
Okay.
Rand Paul's wife says she keeps a loaded gun by her bed over fear of liberals. That was a Newsweek headline. And so, my friend, Lauren, she reposted this, but it didn't copy and paste what I posted. It just posted the link. Mm-hmm. And one of her liberal friends wrote, oh, yeah, he's just scared of us. Okay, haha, what an idiot. And then she goes, oh, let me actually paste what he said, which was, the headline makes it seem like she is irrational, and yet her husband was shot by a liberal on a baseball diamond. His ribs were broken by a liberal neighbor over politics, and let's not pretend that she's nuts and that politics isn't getting dangerous for those involved on each side. The media is getting worse by day and day. And the person goes, oh, yeah, I forgot about all that. I guess she is totally – the person who is a liberal said, yeah, I guess she does have a right to be afraid.
Like, yeah.
So it is just the hysteria that is going on in the left right now makes it very hard – to take any of these people seriously. And I have to wonder, at what point do we start to worry about the behavior of some of these people? At what point do they start turning into to something seriously dangerous? And, you know, when you there was Brooke Baldwin. I wonder if I can find this real quick because it was really stupid. But there's been an ongoing argument about the mob. The mob word is apparently too harsh for what's been going on. And so I went to YouTube to actually look up some videos of what was happening outside of the Supreme Court because it was a mob. I mean, I went and, you know, here is, let's listen to CNN and what they reported on.
Right.
Whoops, wrong video. So here we go. Oh,
the Trump administration is the most corrupt leadership that this nation has seen in the modern era.
Pocahontas.
These are live images, folks, at the doors of the Supreme Court, where you can see protesters have gathered. They are demanding that their voices be heard as they anticipate the person who will be a new Supreme Court Justice, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, be sworn in here any moment. And,
first of all, that woman is as unintelligible as I am and unable to speak. I don't know how she got to where she's at, but very striking. I mean, and so when I went to, and I just put into YouTube Kavanaugh protest, and page after page after page of the infinite scroll was just news outlet after news outlet after news outlet. And this is the problem with YouTube changing their algorithm. They're favoring media.
Right.
And media sensationalizes. Now, so I finally found this guy, John Zablewski's video. It's like 5 minutes long. And listen to the difference, okay, of his experience at that Supreme Court protest.
Thank you.
Hear how pastoral that is. Hear how peaceful that is. Compare that to... So that's the problem with YouTube changing their algorithm. You take the realism of somebody just rolling tape for 5 minutes, unedited at one of these things, and kind of getting their experience on tape and seeing, okay, there are some really wild moments here, like people clawing at the door of the Supreme Court like a bunch of crazy people, but that's what the media runs with. Right. And so everybody just assumes that's what the whole day was like, because all you hear is the dotted screaming in the gallery along with the clawing at the Supreme Court doors. Mm-hmm. So everyone is completely justified in saying that this was a mob.
It's a mob.
Yeah, because it's a mob. Yeah. It's people actually losing their minds in anger.
Uh-huh.
So let me see if I can find... But
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's see if we can... Here. This is Brooke Baldwin. Matt Lewis, Daily Beast writer, senior columnist, conservative, good podcast, and another conservative on Brooke Baldwin on CNN. Here we go.
I believe it's the overreaction of the left. When you see people like Ted Cruz getting chased out of restaurants by a mob...
You're not going to use the mob word here.
Oh, it's totally a mob. It is without a doubt.
Matt.
There's no other word
Matt.
For it. It's a... Go
Matt.
Watch. Put up
a
the
mob,
video of Ted.
Stop. A mob is what we saw in Charlottesville, Virginia, 2 Augusts
right.
ago.
No,
a mob is both. Not what we saw chasing. I'm
what
not
about,
saying what they
the
did
people,
was right.
What about the people who were at the Supreme Court banging on the walls? What do you call that? Civil protest? Or is that a mob? I think it's easily a mob.
She's got her hand in her hand.
Yeah, and if it were Tea Partiers, we'd call it a mob for sure. Come on, let's be serious.
It's Mary Catherine Hamm, a conservative, and she's exactly right. Because every Tea Party I ever went to was framed as out of control, crazy conservatives losing their mind, mm-hmm. and then you'd get you'd watch them. They would film the most insane person at the Tea Party rally, and you knew that was the person that was going to lead the news. The person with the most inflammatory sign, not the other 5,000 people with normal signs that were handmade and cute little kids and mm-hmm. peaceful people. It was framed as nut jobs. It was all nut jobs. Right. Everybody was insane. Look at these crazy people. They're all dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know. But then these Antifa protesters and then these professional protesters and then these people clawing at the door are not the mob. They're just exercising their right to freedom of speech. I forget what Don Lemon said. Don Lemon said, mob is just too harsh of a word. You know, these people are just angry and upset. He says... is it mob behavior? No, it's not mob behavior. It's people who are upset and they're angry with the way this country is going. I mean, angry people is exactly what a mob is.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about, like, if the Tea Party did a quarter of the violence that Antifa has done.
Right.
You know, it would have been ridiculous. The Tea Party, you know, had it been rough to be a Tea Partier because they started to get known for the ones that would have the protests and would clean up after themselves. That had to be like nerve wracking. You know, yeah. Like, oh, we got a protest. Now let's clean this area up.
Oh, no. I mean, the Glenn Beck thing, they specifically, he asked, and they did this.
Mm-hmm.
When Glenn Beck had his rally on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, yeah. His people cleaned up the field and there wasn't a speck of trash left on the field.
Right.
You know, because he knew. Mm-hmm. Conservatives, trash, National Mall. Mm-hmm. You know, it was out of control. So you have the media leading with this little clip here. Where they're banging on the Supreme Court doors when really this is what it sounds like. And so when people call it a mob because they see images that are specifically crafted to inflame, mm-hmm. then they go, this isn't a mob. What are you doing? It's gaslighting.
Right.
People like Don Lemon and Brooke Baldwin are gaslighting us. They are showing us images. And then there is no doubt that there were a lot of people involved in these Kavanaugh protests who are mm-hmm. professionals, who are agitators. But the majority of these people are just there because they're Tea Party people for the left.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but they're framed, you know, by the media as just these are good people just trying to protest. They're not a mob.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had just flipped the signs to an issue that the media cared about, they'd be a dangerous mob. and they would be dangerous because in both cases, the media has created that narrative. And then the media says, don't pay attention to your eyes. Don't pay attention to what you're seeing on our networks. You're being crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitional gaslighting.
Right.
It is out of control insane.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me crazy. And I have to wonder, you know, there is definitely a lot of scary people who are on the left doing a lot of very scary things. But
yep, Trump kicking people at protests,
right?
Hitting people with American signs,
right? But you know, then we have Hillary Clinton. Let's see here. Let's see how long this clip is because there's a lot to break down here.
You're here to talk about.
All right, so good. We got the whole 10-minute clip. I'm gonna have to. I haven't got a text back. He might have forgotten. I have a thing at 8 o'clock, and that's why we start a little early. But he may have forgotten. So, because I really want to break this down. Hillary Clinton lost because she's a big fat phony.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody hates her because nobody believes a word that this woman says.
Yeah.
She finally told the truth. We have always known and have always said that Hillary Clinton is the person that wrote her senior thesis about Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky was a union mob fixer, a mobster. I forget what he did for the mob. But then decided, you know, we need to bring these mob tactics to progressive ideals, and we need to. And he wrote the book Rules for Radicals. He talks about voluntary societies. He's a leftist anarchist, and so I think anarcho-capitalists, especially, would find a lot of similarities in what he talks about. I just have read the book recently, and what I found with Alinsky is he takes those mob tactics and he applies it to politics. And so Hillary Clinton was somebody in the late '60s who was moved by Alinsky. So is Barack Obama. We have always heard from the right that these people are really just deep down leftist agitators. They want socialism. You hear these things, or you're just like, okay, all right. He's hanging out with Bill Ayers, but okay. There's no causation, you know. But and so with Hillary Clinton, there's always this thing where it's like you're like the kid. When your parents are turned around facing the road, you're just punching your sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then when your parents turn around, you're just smiling. And you know, and even no matter how much your sister cries, everybody knows you're the one punching her. Your parents know it, but they didn't see it. They didn't catch you.
Right.
You know, and so there's always a lot of misrepresentation and gaslighting with Hillary Clinton. You know, and so this interview that she gave to Christiana, on CNN, they're buddies, they're bros. Let's not pretend that Amanpour is an objective journalist. No one on CNN is anymore. I mean, you're talking about someone who a year ago was watching CNN all day at work. Like, and over time, I just couldn't take it anymore because it became Fox News of the left. It's like, I'm just not, I can't watch cable news anymore. And so she gives this interview, and all of a sudden, the projection on this woman starts coming out because she's dropped. You know, part of what Alinsky says is we need to put on the suit. We need to wear the tie. We need to drop the radical pose for the radical ends. We need to look like somebody that is a regular person, that is a politician that you can trust, all while having radical goals to move us. And she's just kind of given up on that. And so let's take a listen to the first part of this interview on CNN.
The crisis in democracy, not just in the United States, but all.
Now, whenever somebody talks about the crisis in democracy, what they mean is Donald Trump won and you lost, Hillary.
Yeah.
That's a crisis of democracy. People didn't vote the way I wanted them to vote.
Also around the world. Let me just take you back to election night 2016 when you said we have to give him a chance. We have to let him, you know, let him prove himself and lead, talking about then-President-elect Trump. Now you say you think you were overly hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
What precisely about democracy has you worried?
Well, really, five things. And I started worrying at his inauguration, both because of what he said in his speech, which I thought was defiant, defensive, dystopian. It wasn't a speech to bring...
Defiant and defensive, Hillary. Tea, meat, kettle.
Bring together people who had not supported him, but instead it was aimed, as I say in my book, what happened at, you know, the white nationalist gut. And then over the course of now 2 years nearly since the election, we have seen him degrading the rule of law. We have seen him delegitimizing.
Oh, I don't know, like running guns through Benghazi up to the Syrian conflict without a declaration of war against the country of Syria. You mean like that degradation of the rule of law, Hillary? You know, when she talks about he doesn't appear to be representing all of the people, is there anything in your mind that says that Hillary Clinton, as libertarians, do you think Hillary Clinton gives a flying frick about you? Hillary Clinton cares about her people. The thing about Donald Trump is that Donald Trump cares about his people and makes no bones about it.
Right.
And that doesn't include you and me, but at least you know where he stands. Like with Hillary, it's this fake, phony BS that they're representing all of the people. It's these fake platitudes that people just see through. She's full of crap.
Our elections. We have seen him spreading corruption, both him personally, his family business, others in his administration.
The Clinton Foundation? Why do you think Bill and Hillary are going out to speak together on the college circuit tour? Because Russia's not paying them money anymore.
We have seen him also attacking truth and facts, even reason itself. And
I don't know. You were in the Senate when in the lead up to the war on was she? Yeah, she was a United States senator in 2003, the lead up to Iraq. Correct. She voted to authorize the war in Iraq.
And fundamentally trying to undermine our national unity. So I was hopeful.
Bitter clingers. Pot of deplorables, you know, unity like that.
I wanted to give him a chance. I think every new president deserves a chance. But every month that's gone by, I've become more and more worried about how he governs and how he treats people.
Last night, President Trump.
How he treats people. I'm not even going to bring up Vince Foster because I don't want to seem conspiratorial.
Trump had a sort of ceremony for now Justice Kavanaugh at the White House, and he apologized on behalf of the American people for the immense amount of pain and harm that he said that the judge had been put through by this system. What do you make of that? And what message, including the president's mocking of Christine Blasey Ford for her allegations, what message does that send to women? And remember, women went for president.
Did you actually hear the mocking of Blasey Ford? Did you ever hear that audio clip?
Not all the way through.
All right. It's been repeated over and over and over that he mocked her.
Yeah.
Now, when Donald Trump mocks somebody, he really goes all the way. We played in the beginning. I don't know what I said. He basically was repeating what she said. Now, was it appropriate for the United States president to be bringing that stuff up? No. I wholeheartedly agree with that. But to characterize it as mocking was, for Donald Trump, a stretch at best.
Yeah, especially for Donald Trump.
But if you just repeat it enough times, it becomes the truth.
President Trump, white in 2016, women. White women.
White women. All women went for me. And look, white women have been voting against Democratic presidential candidates for decades now. The white vote has only been won twice in the last 60 years, my husband being one of the two, Lyndon Johnson being the other. So it's not a surprise.
That is true. She's telling facts, yeah.
Disappointment, but it's not a surprise. What was done last night in the White House was a political rally. It further...
Harry, take a look at this image here. Does that look like a political rally?
Yeah, political rally.
Right.
But the yeah.
It's President Trump standing in front of a podium at the White House, Justice
Trump
Kennedy
Tower.
To his left, Brett Kavanaugh to his right.
With his boys next to him.
In the White House, I think that's the Red Room maybe behind them.
It's Trump Tower.
It's the hallway. It is. It was an official ceremony. If you watch any of it, it was not a political rally. And Donald Trump refuted this by saying, well, Hillary Clinton never got it, and that's why she lost.
Undermined the image and integrity of the court. And that troubles me greatly. It saddens me.
This is why Donald Trump drives the left crazy. Because my entire life in politics, watching since 1998 on, I went to Washington, D.C., I think in 96, and I fell in love with the place on a sixth or seventh grade trip. And so I started paying attention to politics from then on. And I remember going to CPAC in 2003, and I remember the talk being like, why can't we have our own activist corps like the left has? And, you know, we just get beat up. The narrative on the right, when I was a Republican in the early 2000s, And it's always kind of been that way from conservatives is, I'm tired of losing, I'm tired of losing, I'm tired of losing. I'm tired of getting beat down. I'm tired of having to apologize. I'm tired of losing, I'm tired of losing. And what the natural inclination for those on the right was Brett Kavanaugh gets confirmed, they win the victory, but then they don't do anything else with it. They kind of hide it and pretend that it doesn't exist. Donald Trump comes out and puts together the exact same swearing-in ceremony that every other justice that I've seen in my lifetime get, and he opens it with, I'd like to apologize to Brett Kavanaugh's family for what they went through. And that is what drives the left crazy, because that lack of an apology or that lack of, we're sorry for being Republicans, we're sorry for being conservatives, we're sorry for being libertarians, we're sorry for not agreeing with the mainstream press, we're sorry, that lack of sensibility pisses them the fuck off, because they don't want that to continue. They want continues to, for Republicans, conservatives, and libertarians. And make no mistake, even if you come from the left, even if you consider yourself a leftist libertarian, you will be the first to get shot at the end when the gulag comes. Like, there is no doubt that unless you completely buy into every aspect of the ideology of the most extreme parts of the leftist crowd, which is starting to take over the party, you are not part of their group. It is, in their mind, us versus them. It is the same ideology as the radical Muslim. And so I have preached togetherness forever. But I have realized over the last several months, there is no winning with these people. There is no common ground. These people do not want us to exist. And it doesn't matter that as libertarians, we agree with them on foreign policy. We agree with them on open borders. We agree with them on the drug war. We agree with them on LGBT rights. We agree with them on so much. At the end of the day, they don't care about that. We're just the last phase.
Right.
And so they characterize you as the right. So your fate is lumped in with the right.
Mm-hmm.
You might as well just get over that fact. Because there is you, and you may be in your car right now going, he's just biased towards the right, and he just doesn't get it. You just don't get it yet.
No, they'll bash you.
You pay attention long enough, and you'll get it.
Yeah, you're part of the fascists. They'll bash you, too.
Yeah, you're a fascist to these people, and so you better wake up and realize that it's us versus them because they're making it that way.
Yep, and if you hold enough cryptocurrency, you've got money, guess what? You're rich. Eat you. Yeah. Eat you, too.
Yep. And I'm not talking about Hillary Clinton. I'm not talking about regular Democrats. I'm not talking about the Joe Donnellys and the Joe Manchins and the, you know, even the Susan Murkowskis or what's her name? Murkow. What is Murkowski's? It's not Frank. That's her dad. I can't think of it. I get stuck on this all the time. I apologize to the senator from Alaska. Susan Collins and Murkowski. I get those two confused all the time. It's because they're women. They all look alike.
Pretty much.
Right. But at the end of the day, I'm not talking about the moderate Democrat. I'm not talking about, like, my friend Jenny. I'd love to have Jenny on the show sometime. She is a very solid liberal. She is somebody that we have a lot of disagreements, but we have very good conversation with each other. We get along. You know, this is not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the person who is beating on the Supreme Court door with a bandana around their face that is majorly influencing the Democratic Party at this moment. And we need the Jennies and the Donnellys of the world to stand up to these people because they're first. But there is very little common ground with a lot of these people. And Hillary Clinton finally tells the truth. So let's continue on with what she's saying.
Me, because our judicial system has been viewed as one of the main pillars of our constitutional government. So I don't know how people are going to react to it. I think given our divides, it will pretty much fall predictably between those who are for and those who are against. But the president's been true to form. He has insulted, attacked, demeaned women throughout the campaign, really for many years leading up to the campaign. And he's continued to do that inside the White House.
Kellyanne Conway, the presidential advisor.
Not going to argue with her because she's right.
talked about this process, and she said it looks very much like a vast left-wing conspiracy. It echoes what you said about when your husband was being pursued by the investigations back in the 90s, a vast white right-wing conspiracy.
Freudian slip.
First of all, your comment on that mirrored language. And secondly, do you see any way, even a conservative thing who I was speaking of yesterday said the only way to repair America is to try to get back to some civility and to try to make it that even if we have political disagreements, we're not going to war with each other. We're not trying to destroy each other.
Well, certainly I would love to see us return to civility, listening to one another, working out our differences. That is not the Republican Party that exists today, and that is certainly not the administration that we have in power right now. When the Republican Senate denied the right of President Obama to have his nominee for the Supreme Court, Merrick Garland, heard...
I think you...
Which was something that was really called the Biden rule from decades earlier, that McConnell just carried on.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get into the he said, she said bullshit, but it's like to blame it. This is what the left and the right does all the time, that they gaslight each other. They confuse us. They get us all crazy over things. Like, well, McConnell did this. Okay, well, Harry Reid did this. Well, then McConnell did this. And then now Booker did this. It's like... That's not an argument, okay? So what are the rules going to be? How does this actually work? And so to say, because the right doesn't play fair, we can't play fair either, there is no civility left, she's saying that what she's always believed, she's finally giving up the bullshit that didn't work as a campaign tactic in 2016, is when they go low, we go high. We're better than this as a nation. That appeal... This is the fundamental change that I have seen in the left over the last 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
As we get closer to the election, and you better believe it's going to happen in 2020.
Oh, yeah.
It has gone from, we need to be better than this, and pretending that they are the guardians of morality and ethics in Washington, D.C., and that if you elect them, they will return us to a time when civility reigned and... Donald Trump is a grotesque human being, but if you elect us, then we will restore the rules of the Senate and the norms that we saw before. And what I have seen out of the left is they're embracing the Trumpian worldview. Yeah,
Trumpsonian.
Both sides are doing this. You see a lot of Republican candidates embracing it. And the left is embracing it now, too. You see Cory Booker raving like a madman when he's somebody that Rand Paul was working on criminal justice reform. Like, to a very reasonable person that I followed for over a decade when I saw him in Street Fight, the documentary that you can watch, I think, on Netflix. And he's just always been a very reasonable Democrat. I liked him a lot. And then all of a sudden, the last couple of months, he's turned into a nut job. And I'm like, why? Oh, he's trying to be Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump won by playing to his base, so now Cory Booker's going to do the same. And so there isn't the apology. They're not apologizing. And this has always been the problem that I've said about Donald Trump from the beginning. When you lose the most maiorium, when you lose the political norms, when you lose the societal norms, and you say these norms don't matter, then that gives license to everyone to behave the same way. And that is what led to the downfall of the Roman Empire, or the Roman Republic, and slid into an empire over the course of 150 years. And we're in the beginning of that, and we're the guardians of the Republic at this point. And by saying the norms that Donald Trump breaks don't matter because the Clintons did it, you are saying it is okay for everybody to behave a certain way. So this is where we're at. So now the left is saying, well, if they're going to behave badly, we can behave badly too. The problem is the left is so steeped in organization going back 150 years that they're better at it. That's why none of these protests are organic. I hate protests because the first women's march was spontaneous and great, and women who were coming out just spontaneously to meet each other and protest. And then you go to the second one. I went to the second one here, and it was nothing but leftist groups that had taken over. It became a data collection bucket for Washington groups, Washington interest groups. The Tea Party Express eventually just took over the Tea Party. Same thing happened with the right. Protests are great if you go to the first one, the one that's spontaneous. Everything else is just a collection tool for the swamp.
Yeah.
So don't even go and participate.
Yeah. Ernest Hancock always said that you want to see a movement grow. Don't try to control it.
Yep.
The moment you try to put any controls on it, you just killed it.
Someone always does. And so now we're seeing Hillary Clinton say, it doesn't matter if you get up in their face. It doesn't matter if you show up and create a mob outside the Supreme Court, or if you harass Ted Cruz out of a dining hall. Like, back when the Republicans were acting like nut jobs and Joe Wilson was screaming from the balconies, "You lie," for days after State of the Union address, every Republican was asked the question on cable news, "Do you agree that this is appropriate behavior for a congressman?" You don't see one leftist politician, Democratic politician, progressive politician, activist, individual, anywhere on the news being asked, "Do you feel it's appropriate for a senator to be harassed? Do you feel it's appropriate for this to..." When Maxine Waters said what she said, "We need to get up in their faces everywhere." That damn coffee maker. I'm just kidding. So there isn't the same question. The standard doesn't exist for the conservatives in the press.
You even wrote that they stole a justice from the Democratic Party.
Well, I think they did. I mean, to keep a Supreme Court seat open for a year, to deny a distinguished jurist, they could have voted him down. They could have said, well, for ideological reasons, philosophical reasons, we're not going to vote for him. But no.
By the way, Merrick Garland and Judge Brett Kavanaugh voted together 93% of the time on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. So I really have seen a lot of remorse over Brett Kavanaugh, and I think 10 years from now we're going to be going, bad pick.
No, they stonewalled. And that was such a breach of Senate ethics and the constitutional responsibility of the Senate to advise and consent on nominations, that you cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. That's why I believe if we are fortunate enough to win back the House and or the Senate, that's when civility can start again. But until then, the only thing that the Republicans seem to recognize and respect is strength. And you heard how the Republican members, led by Mitch McConnell, the president, really demeaned the confirmation process, insulted and attacked not only Dr. Ford, but women who were speaking out. You know, look, I remember.
None of that happened. The closest thing that McConnell ever said was, this mob is coming after people like Ted Cruz, which was accurate.
Yes.
But then it got spun into he's attacking women. None of what she just said happened. She's lying right there. So be uncivil, because all they respect is strength. Get in their grill. Be as uncivil as possible. And then when we have power again, behave. We need you to behave then, because then if you misbehave, we can't enact our plans, because the news will be about you misbehaving. So the woman is just saying, you have carte blanche to do whatever you like, activists. Go for it.
Yeah.
That's the only language they speak. Let's return to the 1960s. This is a person who won the popular vote of the presidency, a former senator,
right,
a former secretary of state, saying that violent extremist behavior is okay in the United States, as long as it's done by the left, but not at Charlottesville.
That is not okay.
Right.
Remember Republican operatives shutting down the voting in Florida in 2000. I remember the swift voting of John Kerry. I remember the things that even the Republican Party did to John McCain in 2000. I remember what they did to me for 25 years, the falsehoods, the lies, which unfortunately people believe because the Republicans have put a lot of time.
Ma'am? The birther movement was started by you. Barack Obama's Not a Citizen came out of Lanny Davis's hands and Podesta's hands and all of your little hatchet men.
I'm money and effort in promoting them. So when you're dealing with an ideological party that is driven by the lust for power that is funded by corporate interests who want a government that does its bidding.
All of the major corporations donated to you, Hillary.
Yep.
How many Goldman Sachs speeches did you give?
Right.
So full of shit.
You can be civil, but you can't overcome what they intend to do unless you win elections. And so the answer to everything is to get back to a balance, to get back to what is called regular order. They don't even have committee processes. The idea that they wouldn't...
They are playing by the same template as the Obama year Senates, of which she was a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And she was not a part of it. But regular order broke at the end of the Bush administration, and it never returned. Democrats controlled the Senate by 60 votes at one point during Obama's tenure. They could have returned us to regular order when they were in control of the Senate then. It's so hypocritical at every turn. I'm done playing this. There's like 4 minutes. You can go watch the rest if you really hate yourself. But, you know, this is just unbelievable lying that she's doing here. She is such an enormous part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
She has been at the core of liberal activism since the late 60s. She and Bill were in the White House for 8 years. They ran the Clinton Foundation. She was the Secretary of State. She ran for office twice. She has run the DNC for the better part of 30 years now. She is the part of the problem. The reason her servers were deleted is so all incriminating evidence could be deleted. 33,000 emails are missing, so we just couldn't find them and bring them up
that
in the election.
That we think are missing, yeah.
Right. This is the woman who rigged the primary, mm-hmm, against Bernie Sanders.
Correct.
So for you to come out and moralize to us from your lofty position that Donald Trump is bad,
mm-hmm,
when you are the biggest piece of garbage in American political history.
Yeah. When
go her, F yourself.
Yeah. Her corporate money destroyed Bernie's non-corporate money.
Right.
You know, and then try to paint the narrative of Bernie bros. These Bernie bros are out here doing this.
Right. All right. Well, we got to start wrapping up. Figured, you know, if we're going to talk about open borders, we got to give some red meat to the more conservative people.
Yeah, that's
so,
true.
Yeah. All right. So final thoughts, Harry.
Let's see. When it comes down to it, allow free people to travel where free people need to go. Restricting someone's movement is just, it grows the state. It grows government. If you feel that they're going to come in and mess with wages or other things going on, then you're just manipulating the market using the force of government still.
Yeah.
It's just instead of it goods, you're using human bodies. I'm sorry, Hillary Clinton just said garbage person. Just puked in my mouth. Just just trying to think of a good way to go after. But it's just because there's still people on the left that will defend her, even though you throw and show them sources and just tell them to do a simple DuckDuckGo search.
Just go read Clinton Cash.
Yeah, they won't. They will not. They will not. You can put everything in front of them, and they're like, "Well, Trump." Trump's not my guy. This is your guy. My guy smoked weed and climbed a mountain.
Right. All right. Anything else?
No. Yeah. That's it. Only the goofy thing I do have to say, it's kind of hard for me to say Hody's name because every time I say it or hear someone say it, I think of a pirate from One Piece. That's about it. Fisherman pirate.
All right. Hody's a good boy. We like him very much. We like everybody who listens to We Are Libertarians. You're all good people. We thank you very much. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, share it. If you didn't, share it anyways. Say somebody might like this garbage. All right. Thanks for listening to We Are Libertarians. Please give those wall dailies a chance. I know it's different. I know we don't like change, but I think you'll enjoy the content. Pick out the ones that you like and listen to it. And stay tuned for more. Got the next couple days already booked out, so very good stuff on the way from We Are Libertarians, especially as we enter into this crazy 2020 election cycle. Whew. It's just around the corner, kids. Middle of next year, we're starting 2020.
Yep.
It's going to be real lit.
It's going to be crazy.
If you think you're nuts now, wait until then. All right, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.